We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
I'm back with Emily Simpson Chapman, who is going through with the adoption of a third child after having faced infertility in her life. Perhaps you've struggled with infertility. Perhaps you're still trying. This is one story that I think is important to hear, to open our hearts, open our minds to the gift of life, in perhaps ways that we're on our terms. This is an incredible story. Emily Simpson, you can find her on Instagram. We'll tag her. Just find me at relevantradio.com/trending, where you can find the link to Emily. She's an author, a blogger, a regular writer online, many of the major Catholic publications. Emily, thank you for joining me on Trending to share your story.
For having me here tonight. You got me out of teeth brushing and getting the two-year-old in pajamas. So I really owe it to you. Thank you.
Well, I can understand that. I have a friend who has four kids under three right now. The last set, she started with a honeymoon baby, and the third set were twins. So she has had four under three. You are about to have three under three here. Can you share a little bit about a phone call 7 months ago that changed your life and kind of how this adoption process started for you?
Adoption is always uncertain. So it's, you know, I always tell people it's like the highest risk pregnancy you can imagine, then, you know, triple it, because there's just so many uncertainties that go into it. But we adopted our son, our oldest son, Toby, 2.5 years ago. And then this last year in 2020, went through the adoption process again and got a call in July that there was a little baby boy in Texas who needed a mom and dad, and did we want to be that mom and dad? And we were on the road in 2 hours. He was in the NICU for almost a month, so we were gone into the middle of August with Beckett. And the week we got home, we got a phone call that our son's biological parents were expecting again. And
your first son's, correct?
Our first son, yes. So our son Toby, the 2-year-old. So they wanted, and they're not able to parent for lots of reasons, and they saw their options as abortion or giving the baby to us. And we're like, okay, give the baby to us. We want the baby. So we had a little creamy in our arms, and we're saying yes to, like, you know, the most Irishy of Irish twins here, I guess. It's a huge blessing. Now, you know, again, we have months to go. You just don't know with adoption. The birth mom has lots of complications with the pregnancy, and it's very stressful. So, you know, I'll sort of rest easy once we'll know how it turns out. But right now, we're just focused on loving our boys and loving and supporting our first son's biological parents as best as we can, and just trying to trust whatever the Lord has for our family.
So it sounds like, for those who maybe aren't that familiar with it, it sounds like you've been in an open adoption with your oldest son's Toby's parents and now their second child. What has that been like in terms of the relationship?
Well, it's really, in some ways, it's more of a semi-open adoption. Birth mother has a lot of struggles. And the birth father has some struggles too, but his are a little more manageable. So he's the one we actually do most of the interacting with. Open adoptions change and evolve through the years. So what an open adoption might look like in the beginning is not necessarily what it looked like 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, because you're always trying to be sensitive to both the needs of the birth parents and the needs of the child. Right now, for his birth parents, it's a very painful thing to, you know, they're still grieving the fact that they're not able to raise him. And so the birth father loves to see pictures and get updates and things like that, but it's too painful for the mother, and she's struggling in other ways. You know, 5 years from now, that could be different. 10 years from now, it could be different. It's really just, it's mostly about what's best for the child. That's ultimately what will determine the relationship over the long term. And having some knowledge of where they come from is always best for the child. So we have the stories. We know the stories of his birth parents. We're able to talk to him about those. you know, as a two-year-old can understand it now, and we'll talk to him about it in different ways as he grows. But it's an evolving thing where you're just trying to love everybody involved in the triad, and just grow. It's just your heart grows through it. So how do I love this person? Is this challenging me to think differently about someone in a different situation than mine? It's just a chance to pray for them. So we're always, always praying for his birth parents.
So if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. That's Emily Simpson Chapman joining me now, getting ready to adopt the third baby, expected just weeks from now. And you were literally holding a preemie baby in your hands, saying yes as a crisis pregnancy is ensuing of the sibling of your eldest adopted child. But share with us a little bit the challenges of making it happen to adopt and how actually people stepped up and helped you make your way there, and even the sacrifices you and your husband have made as a family in order to adopt these children.
Well, this is, you know, this is a real, it's a real problem in the church right now in terms of when we talk about abortion, adoption is always thrown out as the alternative. Like, oh, just, you know, there's people who would adopt the baby. And there's so many reasons why it's so much more complex than that. But one of the things is that adoption is incredibly expensive. You can adopt through foster care for virtually free, but foster care is not about adoption. Foster care is about family reunification. It's being a temporary shelter to children in crisis.
And it's it's important to just distinguish that real quick, because it's a really messy difference, even just the fostering system and even the fact that they are trying to reunite a child to a very unhealthy circumstance, to the point where they won't necessarily work with you to adopt a child who would be otherwise endangered. And so, people often confuse adoption and fostering. Fostering's a long haul, and it's something that we as Christians need to step up and work on, even in the face of a broken system. But adoption, I want to come back to this, is expensive. And for those people who are struggling with fertility, share a little bit more of that journey.
Well, you know, adoption, the average domestic infant adoption, you hear they say 30 to 40,000, but having gone through this three times now and seen lots of potential cases, most cases you see range between $40,000 and $50,000, which is an exorbitant amount of money, especially, you know, if you work for the church. My husband's a Catholic high school teacher. I'm a Catholic writer. And for lots of families, that's just out of the range of what they could possibly imagine. And so you can do things. You can take out a home equity loan, which we've done. You can sell your car, which we've done. We sold our second car. But you almost always have, unless you make a lot more than my husband and I make, I guess if you're Wall Street banker or something, you could afford, you could drop $40,000 every time you want to have a child. But most people can't do that. And so it makes them feel like it's out of reach. And the Protestant churches are phenomenal at fundraising as a community and people standing alongside each other and saying, yes, we see this as a responsibility to help care for these children. How do we do this? And Catholics, for a long time, we had Catholic Charities. And Catholic Charities made adoption affordable for Catholic families. But unfortunately, due to all of the same-sex marriage laws and anti-discrimination against homosexual laws, most Catholic charities have gone out of the adoption business. So there's no Catholic Charities we could adopt through anywhere in Pennsylvania. And there's just this huge vacuum now for helping Catholic families adopt. And I went through a list of about 100 adoption grants when we were getting ready to prepare for this third adoption. And not a single one is run by Catholics. Not most of them favor Protestants, so it's much harder as a Catholic to get adoption grants. And Catholics are always kind of like, oh, really? You need help with your adoption? Now, I've been so blessed. We've had so many people help us, and it's been great to be able to help people understand the costs families are facing. But, my dream would be someday that we've talked with a couple other Catholic adoptive families about this, to be able to start getting grants going in different dioceses and educating parishes about the needs, because foster care is a wonderful option when family reunification is on the table. But there are also times when there are parents who are not equipped to parent any time in the next decade, or who, for very good reasons, don't think they'll ever be able to equip to parent. And we want those kids in good Catholic homes. want them in homes where maybe there's not a lot of money, but there's so much faith and there's so much love and there's beautiful openness to life. And so how do we how as a church do we help families do this?
This is incredible because this is something, as you said, that's not talked about. And infertility is becoming more and more predominant. People in the church are struggling and they're turning and they're spending exorbitant costs on in vitro fertilization. They're not being told helpful information for some about Napro doctors who can help treat underlying health issues that are impacting infertility. But on the other end, where you're talking about people say just adopt. I mean, in fact, we just had a caller call in, Tom from Huntington Beach. He said, you know, he and his wife couldn't have children. And so his priest recommended adoption and they have two children through adoption as well. You know, it is an option, but how do we help people get there? So you literally made this happen in the most grassroots way possible with an incredible technology, social media. I mean, this is an incredible way to use social media. Share with us how other people helped step up for you to ultimately be able to adopt.
Yeah, well, for our last adoption, so for Toby, we brought extensively, and we had help from friends and family. But when we got around to adopting Beckett last year, you know, like, we take a third mortgage out on our house. We don't know what else we're supposed to do here. So I wrote a cookbook, and it's filled with recipes designed for hospitality. And there's essays on hospitality in it, and I made it available to anyone who donated to our adoption fund. And so that did tremendously well and enabled us to adopt Beckett last year. And then when we were getting ready to adopt, getting ready for this next hopeful adoption, I was like, oh, what do I do again? I already did the cookbook. And I decided to just give it a try and see if there were more people out there who wanted the cookbook, and there were. And then I was going to finish up the last bit of the fundraiser because grants have not been working out as we'd hoped. And so I was like, well, I could do another cookbook or I could do meal planning. And I decided I would just post Lenten Friday meal suggestions, three recipes a week up on my blog. And then I said, whatever. Once we get me to our goal, then I'm just going to give the rest of the money to Sisters for Life. But we actually beat the goal before I could even start doing the blog. So now I'm just blogging for Sisters for Life.
So praise God. So you have what you need in order to proceed with the next adoption. We will be praying for you because I understand it's a high-risk pregnancy. There's been abortion in the conversation, but you are willing to be there and adopt this baby. Now, you said you fundraise everything you have, so anything from this great idea, and for those who don't know, but we're posting links on social media. You can find me at Timmerie, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E, to Emily Stimson Chapman. You can get your fish-friendly, non-fish-friendly, but no meat recipes. Three recipes a week are being posted. There are three types of recipes that you're posting once a week, and you're offering them completely for free, or people have the option to donate to your tip jar. And can you share with us where you're donating the money and what inspired this?
Sure. The money's going to go to Sisters of Life, which, for those who aren't familiar with the order, are a wonderful order of religious sisters. They were founded in New York by Cardinal O'Connor to just uphold the dignity of life. And they work with mothers in crisis pregnancies. They support these mothers over the long term because it's not just financial needs these women need. They also need, they have emotional needs. You know, they need to feel loved and supported. Their baby's going to be loved, and the sisters do that. They work with post-abortive women who are grieving. They just do wonderful things in about, I think, six cities now across America. And see, I should say two things. So on one hand, I had an easier time than some people do raising the money because I do have a larger presence on social media. People know my writing. But I've also seen people who have no presence on social media, you know, creatively raise money for an adoption. Because I truly believe when God wants someone to adopt, he will make the finances come. Like, one of my friends was adopting a year ago, and they just were scraping by. And at the last minute, she reached out to someone and was like, hey, we're going to have a Marian basket raffle. If you know of anyone, could you just send out, you know, let them know about this? And that person sent her a $10,000 check.
Wow.
And that put them at the limit. So you just never know. And I think being willing to step out there and ask and try to fundraise, God will make sure that the money gets to you if this is what is supposed to happen. Money, all the money is God's. So it's just, mm-hmm. He has to redirect it. But for me, what's the hardest is that I can go on social media, I can talk to people and have the help given to us that we need. But there are women out there who are facing a crisis pregnancy and they don't have their help, or they don't know where to find that help, even though in places it exists. And so they feel like they have no choice but to have an abortion or to place their baby for an adoption. And no woman should ever feel that way. Like, there is always help and it's out there. And so it's a question of, how do we reach them? How do we get them the help they need? And the Sisters of Life are that bridge between people who have the means to help and the women who need the help. And so for me, working through my struggles, accepting help when I know there's so many other women out there who need help, this is a way where I feel like I can be a good steward of the blessings God has given me with my work and my writing and my social media activity, and really help women who don't have, you know, who don't have $17,000 on Instagram that they can call on and rely on, or who don't have loving families supporting them. And the Sisters of Life are such a wonderful, wonderful group of women, and they'll give those women that help. So if we can give them some money, they can give those women more help, and there can be more mothers who, if they do decide to place for adoption, are doing that freely and doing it knowing that, you know, believing that that's the best decision and not making that choice or not making the choice to abort out of fear or belief that there's no help out there for them.
And it's a matter of, what are you willing to ask for? And you are willing to ask people to help you, to tell people what you were looking for, that you were looking to adopt a child and you needed help. And I think so often, both our pride, our embarrassment, our egos can be impacted when we ask other people for help, especially when it relates to money. But God is the provider of all things. And it's so funny, because we were talking about self-actualization a couple weeks ago here on Trending, about how people, you know, ask the universe for things to come to them. Wow, why wouldn't we ask God, who is the creator of all, the giver of all, and who wants every good and great gift for you and I? And he will, if it is good for us, if it is the right timing, he will give it to us. God is so generous, and this is what your story reminds me of. And to hear the story that you are now donating, you've, in the last 24 hours, you've fundraised over $2,400 for the Sisters of Life. 100% of the tip money from your Lenten recipes is going to the Sisters of Life. Now, that's incredible, especially because, you know, not too long ago, I recorded a video with Jubilee Media, and they tend to do this show called Middle Ground, where three people debate three people on the opposite side on an issue. And I was talking to three pro-abortion women. At least two of the three of them were post-abortive. And at one point, I don't think during the recording, I don't think this made it into the actual video, one of the girls looked at me and she said, "Look, I see you there. You're married. You're wearing a nice dress. You're dressed nice. You're dressed all cute. Who do you think you are telling me that people who have had abortions have the resources they need in order to keep their babies?" And I just looked at her and I said, "I've worked for years in the crisis pregnancy centers. And when a woman needs something and she asks a counselor, she asks a crisis pregnancy center, if they do not already have it, all it takes is an email blast, a social media post, or a phone call, and we have multiple offers for the exact thing that person needed in minutes." God answers prayers. He changes lives, but we have to be willing to ask. And so you fundraising for the Sisters of Life is a great example of getting the resources to places that can help make that difference in someone else's life. So thank you so much, Emily, for sharing this. I will just have, you know, one last question here for you. For those who are struggling with fertility and they've been told by people, just adopt, what is your message to those people who are in that conundrum, that they feel uncomfortable, maybe they're not really open to adoption, they're afraid of the price?
I think adoption is not a cure for infertility. They're two separate ways, you know, they're two separate things entirely. And so I think some women, when they hear just adopt, feel guilty because their heart's not in that place yet. And they're like, oh, mm-hmm. If I really want a baby, that's what I should do. But it's the exact thing you should not do. Because first, you have to start the healing from infertility. You have to make peace with the fact that your body is not doing what it wants it to do. For me, that meant stepping back from all fertility treatments for a while before we even began the adoption process. And so no more Nepro, no vitamins, no special diet, like all of it, no charting. I just had to be done with it. And in doing that, I found so much peace. I was like, oh, okay, I've just been fighting God and trying to wrestle this out of him, and this is not what he wants for me. And it was when I did that, that my heart really was like, oh, okay, adoption is what we want to pursue. Chris and I talked about it, and then all of the doors blew open so fast for that first adoption. And I think that's what God wants you to do. He wants you to be healed of the pain of infertility, or at least start that process, because it's not something you're going to get over in a week or a month or a year, but to start that healing, make peace, and then think about adoption, then pray about adoption. You know, God speaks to us through the peace. And so that's what you have to find first before you move on to the adoption process. And talk to people about it. You know, don't keep, there's so many women struggling with infertility, so many women suffering, and so many, unfortunately, feel like they have to suffer alone, and they don't. So that's my advice. And I will say one thing, we have actually raised $4,000 by today now.
Wonderful.
So we've had a lot of really generous people. So $4,000 for the Sisters of Life in, 12 hours, and we've got four more Fridays of Lent to go that I'll be giving meal suggestions for, so people can leave their tips in the tip jar if they're enjoying the recipes, and we're going to send off a big check to the Sisters of Life, hopefully around the same time the little girl we hope to adopt is born.
Praise God. If you're looking for some Lenten recipes to change it up, that way you don't starve and grab for the Cheetos when we're not supposed to be eating meat. Should we be eating Cheetos on Fridays during Lent or when we're fasting just because we're starving from our fasting? Here are some great recipes and ideas. We'll post a link at relevantradio.com for show notes. I've also tagged Emily Stimson Chapman in our social media. She's written countless books, from recipes to dealing with eating disorders to much more. So go ahead and check her out. I'll be right back in just a bit. Why shouldn't you smoke pot? And what should you say when your kids want to? And how do you figure out the signs when perhaps a loved one, a spouse, or a child, maybe you're showing signs that they're smoking? We'll be right back here on Trending.
Timory will be right back. You can reach her on Instagram and Twitter at Timmerie. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E.